Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living Your Life by Design, a conversation of self, health, and wealth. And now, your host, certified career consultant, life coach, and author, Kathy Holloway Hill.
Good evening, listeners, everyone who's joining us in the chat room, dialed in from all over the world. We welcome you. We welcome you to the Living by Design show. I am Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we welcome you to the show this evening. Tony, I tell you, I am so excited about tonight's show. My guest, I tell you, I have been following this wonderful spirit for so many years, and she is just absolutely my life mentor. I just look up to her, and I love her dearly, and I know I'm jumping straight into that, but, you know, I'm just so excited. I didn't want to do that, but first, before I get to that, Tony, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing okay. I'm actually traveling, so that little beeping sound is my engine light making a little noise, so I apologize to the listeners trying to get to a stationary position right now.
Okay, well, that's fine. We understand. Those things happen, so you're with us. That's the most important thing. Well, one thing I want to just go ahead and mention real quick, so I want to bring my guest on the line because I'm really excited about getting her on the line, but our theme this month, we're closing out our theme with a bang, our life reinvention theme, and we are closing it out with, I mean, she is the master, the mother of life reinvention, life healing, Miss Dr. Reverend Ayanla Van Zandt, and I am so excited to have her with us this evening. Next month, we are going to continue our theme of life reinvention, and we're going to add a little bit of a twist because, you know, Tony, as you very well know, I receive tons of emails from people who just, they feel like they're stuck. They don't know how to get unstuck. So next month, we are going to have just a wonderful lineup of guests and psychiatrists and experts and professionals who are going to help us with the life reinvention and the getting unstuck problem that a lot of people seem to be dealing with. So that's coming up starting next month, the month of July, and we're looking forward to that. So, and our guest tonight, I'm sure she can probably add some insight as to that unstuck situation, too. So, Tony, unless you have any other announcements or anything, I am so anxious to get my guest on the line here. Is there anything that you want to add and say to our listeners?
No, I'm excited also. I mean, it's been a long time since I've had an opportunity to listen to, hear, and even interview Ayanla Van Zandt. And it's just, I'm looking forward to it. I really, really am.
Excellent. All right. Well, with no further ado, I want to bring on, as I stated, one of my life mentors that I have followed my entire life. I love her work. I've read just about every one of her books. In the Meantime is absolutely my favorite. And this young lady has received so many awards and accolades. I would probably have to spend the next 15, 20 minutes, half the show, talking about everything she's done, her awards, her recognition. She's been recognized by Women's Day Magazine, Ebony Magazine. She's been on the Oprah Show. She's had her own TV talk show, NBC, ABC, just, oh, my God, the list goes on and on and on, and she's just a best-selling author. And most importantly, she cares about changing the lives of others, and I love that about her, and I love her dearly. And I am going to bring on my guest for the evening, Dr. Reverend Ayanla Van Zandt. Hello, Miss Ayanla Van Zandt.
How are you, my love?
Oh, I'm wonderful. I am so good now. I tell you, I've been, you know, I don't mean to make it all about me, but I've been dealing with some things this week, and, you know, God just does everything for a reason, and I'm so pleased to just be on the other end of the phone with you.
Oh, well, good.
Yes,
yes, it's my honor, as always, to be with you, and to be, let me say hello to your listening family. And I'm glad for the support that they give you. And I'm just really excited that people are open to this kind of radio, you know, where we're talking about the things that matter and the things that help us to change our lives. How are you, Tony?
I am good. I'm very good. Good to hear your voice again.
Yeah.
I had an opportunity to actually interview you. It's been years and years ago in Indianapolis. So it was, it's a long time ago since I had an opportunity to hear your voice on the phone. So it's a good time. So I'm really looking forward to today.
And I think that
but
was
you know
you
what?
Were
I
with.
I never forget a voice. Some people say they never forget a face. I never forget a voice. Yeah.
You know, I'm the same way. I'm the same way. And,
yeah.
and especially you would never forget a voice like Tony's. But anyway.
Never.
We're not going to go there. So, yeah, I am just so excited to have you here with us. Now, I want to just start out, Anyala, because I know you – is it okay if I call you Anyala, or would you prefer Reverend or
Doctor? Oh, no, no, no. Please call me Iyanla, but just say it with feeling.
Oh, absolutely. Iyanla, oh, my God, I am just so excited. But, Iyanla, I would like for you to just start out with your personal story because you have accomplished so much in your life. And I know people look at you and say, you know, they see your glory, but they don't know your story. And we all have a story.
Yeah.
And if you could just share a little bit of, you don't have to go into great detail, but just whatever you want to share and open up and just tell our listeners some of the things that you had to deal with. It hasn't always been peaches and cream in your life.
Well, I don't think it's been that way for anyone. You know, there's a scripture
exactly.
that says, be not afraid of humble beginnings. And I come from very humble and dysfunctional beginnings. My mother was an alcoholic who died of breast cancer when I was 3 years old. She was the other woman. My father was a married man. And so when my mother died, we were left in the care of my paternal grandmother, who probably was in her late 30s, 40s at the time. And all of a sudden, she's a Native American. She was a Native American, and she was a chef and a housekeeper. So she worked for the wealthy white folks up in Mount Vernon and White Plains. Two people that I know she worked for, one was Charles Wilson, who's the heir to the Revlon dynasty, and the other was Andy Granatelli, who was a major race car driver. And she worked as a cook and a housekeeper for both of them. And then all of a sudden, in the midst of her life, she finds herself saddled with two children. Not unlike many grandmothers today who are raising children because their children have either passed on or are incarcerated or are suffering from whatever, drug use, substance abuse. So many grandmothers are raising children. So she found herself with myself and my brother. I was 2 and a half. My brother was 4. And she wasn't very pleased about that. Plus, she grew up not only on a reservation but in the South. So her concept of discipline and child rearing was very, very different from probably what we would find today. I think most people would be arrested if they treated their children today the way my grandmother treated me particularly, because I was just a very precocious child. My brother was a severe asthmatic, so he got away with a lot more than I did. So I have a difficult time saying that I was abused as a child because I know that was not her intention, but I experienced a great deal of physical and mental and emotional dysfunction. The other thing is that I do believe that my grandmother was clinically depressed, and, you know, that particularly in the African American community, the Native American community, we don't deal with mental health issues very well. So it either went undiagnosed or it went unaddressed or whatever, but I got a lot of that. So after I was removed from my grandmother, I went to live with my father and my stepmother. My father was a street hustler, a gambler, a number runner, who spent many times in and out of the jail. When my stepmother could no longer take care of us, she sent me to live with an aunt and an uncle. Ultimately, my uncle raped me at the age of 9. And then by the age of 13, I just had my own experiences. And I had my first child at the age of 13, not unlike many young girls today. Back then, however, I won't tell you how long ago that was. It was a disgrace. It was a disgrace. I mean, you disgraced your family. You disgraced your community. It wasn't acknowledged and welcomed and accepted and accommodated like it is today. I have no judgment about it. I just know that when it happened for me, it was very different. That child died at the age of 6 months from SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. I went back to high school, went back to live with my stepmother, back to high school. By age 16, I had my second child, and my stepmother, God bless her, saved my life because she didn't make it easy for me. She didn't make it easy for me to have a child. She insisted that I go back to school, that I complete school, that I get a job, that I work. She didn't babysit. I had to figure it out, and I did. Got married at 19 to a heroin-addicted Vietnam vet who really wasn't up for family life, shall we say. And so that was a very challenging experience. Let me see what else. I don't know where to go. I mean, for me, it's not unlike...
The aha moment for you that made you go from all of those challenges and those obstacles and first one thing and then another to push you over to the beginnings of where you are now?
Well, I think what happened for me was my second marriage was an abusive marriage. My husband was physically and verbally abusive. And after I stabbed him and almost killed him, see, I wasn't a total punk, you know.
No, that's right.
I just said this, enough. There just comes a day when you just have to say, okay, enough, right. done with this. I am complete. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm not doing this anymore. And when that energy comes up in your soul, you just start riding on the wave of that. And that's what it was for me. Enough. Done. You know, I know how to suffer. Let me try something else.
Let me try something else. Wow.
And I was 30 years old, 3 children. I went to college, finished in 3.5 years, summa cum laude, went to law school, finished there, went to practice law at the public defender's office in Philadelphia. And after that, my life, I really had to kind of run to keep up with my life. I wrote my first book when I was working as a life empowerment specialist for a program that was taking women from welfare to work. And mm-hmm. Tapping the Power Within was my first book published in 1988. And it really was a collection of the handouts I gave those women. I put them all together in a book. And that was my first book. My second book, Acts of Faith, was published as a result of someone reading and seeing Tapping the Power Within.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the point that I want to make. When you get to that point when you say, enough, let me try something else, you may not even know what it is. You just have to have a clear vision that you want to do better. You want to feel better. You want to have more. You want to be more. You just have to kind of make that decision. And if you do that and you put one foot in front of the other, I heard you earlier talking about people being stuck. And I do a 6-week boot camp online to get unstuck. So I really want to invite your listeners to join me for that process. But
let's go ahead and give that website out right now before we, because actually I have tons of people lined up in my switchboard waiting to try to come on and say something. So before we get all caught up in that, let's get that website out there right now.
Okay, I want to do that. And let me, you know what, one of the things that has saved me in life is I have to be honest. I am at the mall driving around trying to pick up my granddaughter. And she's calling me, and I haven't answered the phone because I'm on the line with you. But I need to answer her call and find out where she is so I can stop. You know, excuse me, audience, I'm a grandmom, and this is summer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You go right ahead. You go right ahead. Because I need to get some ground rules for how we're going to do these call-ins tonight. So you go ahead.
Okay, go ahead. Thank you, audience. Thank you, Kathy. Hold on.
Okay. Now, while Ms. Inyala is taking care of her business, I want to let the listeners know, if you've listened to my show before, I'm going to repeat this, but if you're new and you're listening for the first time, then you will understand that this is the ground rules that we have to set here at the Living by Design show. There are tons of people on hold with Skype numbers, blocked numbers, and I can't see where you're dialing in from. I cannot bring you on the line to speak to our guest unless you unblock your number or I can see where you're dialing in from. And I'm sure you want to speak to Iyanla, and I totally understand, but unless you block your number and I can see where you're calling in from, I cannot take a risk to be disrespectful to our guests. I have had some situations. This is a live show, and I can't take that risk. So I'd love to bring you on the line to make your comment or ask a question, but you have to unblock your number first. So those are the rules.
And Kathy, if I could just add, I mean, I know that on Blog Talk there are a lot of shows that are raw, and, you know, they let their callers say just about anything and do just about anything, but this isn't that kind of show. So just want to make sure that people know that, you know, this show has a different sensibility about it, has a different aspect. So those shows, they can do that. We want to know who calls, so if somebody goes beyond the point of whatever, we'll know who you are, and we can track you down. So that's kind of how we handle things, just so folks will know why we're doing it that way. It's just the way we like to handle things because we want to, as Kathy mentioned, make sure we're always respectful. And nothing against any other show that does the kinds of things that they do. We just have a show that is based on positivity and lifting a soul and a spirit. And sometimes people want to act up in the midst of that, and we just can't allow that. So if someone happened to do it, we can find who you are, report you, and make sure that you're not on the show, on anyone's show anymore. So that's kind of how we do things. So.
And I expected this. I knew that there were going to be tons of my listeners that would like to speak to Iyanla. So I am – Iyanla, are you back?
Yes, I'm back. I've done my grandmotherly duty, and my granddaughter's right here.
Excellent. I am going to go ahead and bring one caller on the line. It's actually also in the chat room, and he let me know, this is me. So I am going to open the line. Roland, if you can hear me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. And you?
Wonderful. Thank you. Family, Ms. Van Zandt, how are you doing as well?
I'm blessed. Thank you. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Thank you. I just wanted to just quickly say your book, Acts of Faith, my brother bought the book for me. He said, you know, you have to read this. And I had some employees that we used to go through your book every day, and I would sit them down on our lunch break and read through your book, Acts of Faith. So continue doing the good work, and Kathy, the same to you as well, and thank you very much.
Well, Roland, you got to be on the lookout for the best of Acts of Faith. It's coming out first thing in the fall, so be on the lookout for that. I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, and continued success in doing the work that you do. I mean, even that show Starting Over was very good. You know, I highly respect you, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. We appreciate
thank
it. So you're going to just listen from the chat room.
No, I'm going to listen from the phone. Please don't hang me up.
I wouldn't do that. Okay.
All right.
Excellent. I am going to, while we're doing this, go ahead and take one other call, and then we're going to get back to our discussion. Area code 770, you're on the line.
Hi, Kathy. This is Helen from Indianapolis through Smyrna, Georgia. How are you?
Hi, Helen. I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
Great, thank you. My question would be for, and I want to say the name correctly, so you help me.
Iyanla.
Okay, well, anyway, my question is, what would you say to parents to help them recognize the recognize if a 9-year-old, 10-year-old is possibly being abused?
Okay, all right. You said, what would I say to parents?
I mean, how could a parent recognize some of those signs? As a child, when you were a child, what would you have wanted your parents or your guardians to see?
Well, everybody knew I was being abused. I grew up in dysfunction where everyone was afraid of my grandmother. They knew that she wasn't well. But again, you know, there was a time when we didn't discuss mental illness. We didn't have big words like depression and OCD, and we didn't have television shows like Intervention and Hoarders. Everyone knew that my grandmother was abusive. She abused everyone. It's just that I happened to be the smallest one in the group. But things that you can look for are, of course, unexplained bumps and bruises on children. Children are withdrawn. If you really want to identify what's going on in a child's life, have them draw a picture of their home. And there's some things that you should... You should look for smoke coming out the ceiling, out the chimney. You should look for flowers around the house. You should look for how they create the windows, if the house has windows, if the house has a door. Psychologists will tell you if you have the children draw a picture of their home or draw a picture of the people in their life that they love, you can tell by the colors they use and the way they draw them whether or not that child is abused. But and the other thing is a sudden move around a child. Just move quickly and see if the child flinches, if they move, if they put their hand up in a defensive posture. That's another way that you can tell if a child is being abused. So those are just some things that you look for. But I think, personally, when a child is being abused, somebody knows it. Somebody knows
it. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Helen, for dialing in. And I'm going to mute your mic, but I'm going to keep you on so you can listen from your phone line.
Thank you.
Oh, no problem, no problem. Okay, so, you know, if you don't mind, Iyanla, I love your work. And there is something on your website that you wrote about love. And I know love is so important in our society, and I'm just going to read this really quickly, if you don't mind, so that my listeners can I want to share this with them.
Okay.
It's called Beloved. It is really all about love. We want to know how to get it and how to keep it. We want to know what it feels like and what it looks like. We want to know if we will ever experience the love we long for, the love we search for, the love we desire. But there's just one problem. When you are looking for love, the thing you are looking for is the thing you are looking with. Whatever you think, feel, believe, and hold to be true about love will become your looking glass. It will be your magnifying glass. It will be the magnet that attracts to you more of what you have had, and possibly more of what you do not want. Love is not a thing you can find. Love is who you are. And that's not the whole part, but those are extremely important words, and I wanted to make sure that our listening audience heard that because I just felt that that was just so profound for me.
Well, I think the line that, you know, I'm always amazed when someone reads to me or tells me something that I wrote, and I'm like, oh, my God, I wrote that? What was I thinking? But thinking is the operative word, yeah. When you just, you know, I move in the spirit, so it's a whole nother issue. But the operative word there is what you're looking for is what you're looking with. Even the people who say they are stuck, the people who say they're stuck or the people who can't move ahead, because we all have listening and vision filters. And so the mind, I was telling my grandson today, I said, you know, the mind is like a puppy. And if you don't train it, it'll be pooping in the middle of the floor. It'll be humping on your company when they come over. It'll pee on the carpet. You've got to train the mind. And so many of us have had a mind that's been trained by struggle and suffering and disappointment and sorrow. So since our mind has been trained with those experiences, we hold those experiences and we look for more of that. I would do this. I'm scared I'm going to get hurt. I would do that, but the last time I did it, it didn't work. I would go here, but, you know, what if such and such happens? So the thing you're looking for is the thing you're looking with. So what we have to do is constantly clean our filters. Yes, boo-boo cheated on you, betrayed you, had six kids with Shaquisha, and then left you and ruined your credit. But that don't have nothing to do with the other hundreds of billions of men who are out here who will love you and honor you. Yes, he started your paperclip business, and it failed miserably, and you ended up being in bankruptcy. But that doesn't have anything to do with the fact that now you want to start a cookie business. Start the cookie business with an eye on success for the cookie business, and not with your eye on the failure of the paperclip business. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense. And the other thing that I like to add to that is people who say they get it and they pray. They pray and they ask God, I don't want to be like I was in the past. I don't want to allow those previous experiences to affect the love that I'm looking for right now. And then the love comes to your life and you miss it because you're so focused on all that other junk that you're still holding on to from your past.
But anybody that prays about...
You ask for the blessing, you ask for the blessing, and then you miss it.
But anyone who prays about what they don't want is praying the wrong prayer. And anybody that's holding on to what you don't want, you're asking the wrong question. The question is not why did that happen or how can I keep it from happening again. The question is what did I learn and what quality did I grow within me and what strength did I develop as a result of that experience. And when we get grateful for each and
enhance it. That's right.
Right. And each and every time we get grateful for what we've been through, no matter how challenging it may have been or felt, we grow something new inside of us that we get to practice. You know, some of us want to grow qualities, but we don't want to practice them. Why do you need faith if you never have a challenge? Why do you need patience if you get everything your way? You, in order to grow the quality, in order to live the principle, you have to have the test and the challenges and the opportunities to practice and master the thing that you're growing in your soul.
That's exactly right. I mean, and I'm a very spiritual person, and I know you are too. And, you know, I spoke to a group a month or so ago, and I told them, because they all want God to, you know, answer my prayer and please, God, order my steps. And I'm like, don't ask God to order your steps if you don't want to move your feet. I mean,
right.
If you want to stay stuck in a spot and stuck in the mud, you're not going to be able to move your feet to get to the next spot to move out of the mud and go forward. So why are you asking God to order your steps? Do you really mean it, or do you even know what you're asking?
Well, the challenge is, and I may disturb and upset some people with this, so I'm willing to run the risk, is that many people who pray that prayer are praying to an external God. And they're praying to a God that they want to do something for them as opposed to with them. So when you're praying to an internal God, you understand that God is going to do this with you and through you. God could only do for you what God can do through you. But when you're praying to an external God, you're waiting for an external sign, and you're also waiting for a guarantee that if you do A, B, C, E, F, G is going to happen. And that's where a lot of us fall short and a lot of us stay stuck in disappointment. God is in you. So when you pray the prayer, start moving your feet. When you pray the prayer, follow the inkling. And don't wait for, you know, some monumental voice to boom down upon you when you're sleeping or send you an email to tell you what to do.
That's right. That's right. I'm glad you said that, Iyanla, because, you know, I hear from so many of my clients and colleagues and family and friends, and they will pray, and then they'll say, well, you know, I have a feeling or a coincidence happened. There are no feelings. There are no coincidences. That's God trying to speak to you. Listen.
Yeah. Well, again, when we pray to an external God, we wait for it to happen to us as opposed to through us.
And in us. That's right. That's absolutely correct. I totally, totally agree. So, Yama, if you could pick the most critical ingredient for trying to reinvent yourself, because, you know, the society is bad, economy is struggling and all these things, and people are really trying hard to reinvent themselves, what is the most critical ingredient, in your opinion, for reinventing yourself?
Well, I really have to say there are two.
Okay.
You know, there's nothing has one ingredient except water. And that has oxygen and hydrogen. But
exactly.
What I would say, the two ingredients, number one, is truth. You have to tell the truth of who you are, where you are, what you want, what you're willing to do, what you're not willing to do, what you're willing to give up, what you're not willing to give up. And many of us don't own our current reality. We don't tell the absolute truth. We don't ask for what we really want. We ask for what we think we can have. And all of that goes into you being able to reinvent yourself. You've got to tell the truth about what you did, what you didn't do, what you said, what you didn't say, how you felt. You've got to tell the truth. And we get stuck in the fantasy, alone in our head without adult supervision. And we don't tell the truth. We tell the nice story, the pretty story. And we've got to tell the truth. So that's number one. And number two, the most critical vision, the most critical ingredient for me is vision. You have to be able to see where you want to be. If you can't see it, you will never get there. And some of us don't see in our mind's eye. Some of us feel. Some of us sense. But you've got to have a vision. You've got to be able to close your eyes and in technicolor be able to describe where you are, what you're doing, what it feels like, who's there with you, and the experience of what it is that you want. And if you don't have a vision, you are not going to move. And so many of us, Kathy, are afraid to dream. We don't use our imagination. We don't impress upon the universe that which we would like to see unfold in our life. Without vision, the people perish. And many of us are perishing because we don't have vision. We're trying to make it happen. We're trying to think it into being. You've got to be able to see it because life will only give you as far as you can see.
You know, and that's why I love you so much because you are, I mean, your belief, everything you say totally aligns with everything I say and do. I mean, that's one of the things that I said in my event that it was a church, and I talked about that. I talked about vision, and I even used that same passage, when there's no vision, the people perish. And a lot of people say, well, I'll believe it when I see it, but that's backwards thinking.
Yes, you got to believe it in order to see
it. In order to believe it.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, you have to first see it in order to believe it. If you can't visualize it in your conscious mind, because your subconscious doesn't do anything except store information. So it takes whatever you envision in your conscious mind, it takes it as reality.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't know the difference in a vision and reality. It doesn't care.
No. Tony, are you still there? Is Tony there with us, or have we lost him?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here. Absolutely.
Okay. You know, a couple of weeks ago, and I want to engage you in this conversation if you can. About 3 weeks ago, I did my annual workshop with men, and this was following a online program that I did, a 12-week online program with men called the 3 E's, Excellence and Expression and Experience. And I had 278 men online for 12 weeks. Well, as the weeks went on and they had to do their self-work and they had to do their self-work, I ended up with, out of 278, 108 men completed the process. After that, I invited them in for a weekend to take the process even deeper, and 39 of 108 showed up. But one of the things that I realized in working with the brothers was how challenged men are to see and hold a vision that they feel they can't control. Is that your experience as a man, or do you know that the experience of men?
That's absolutely one of the biggest challenges with men, because the way that men are raised, in many instances, they are raised as leaders and folks that are supposed to be in control of situations, and it seems like there is a sense of and a sensibility of weakness in a lot of men when they don't have that control, and they don't want to give that perception at all. So if it's not a situation that they can be in control of, and or a situation that they can recognize as something that someone else will look at and say, well, that person's pretty strong, that person's in control, that person knows how to handle business, then they'll walk away or deflect any of the kind of conversation that you would want, because they don't want to seem that way. I mean, that's what happens a lot of times. A lot of men aren't as in touch with themselves, like you were talking about, the truth about yourself. You have to be honest with yourself. A lot of men aren't truthful with who they are and what they are or what they have become. And it's that continuing of self-evaluation or even lying to yourself in many instances. And you know if you get too close or they get too close, they can see the lies that you've told yourself. And a lot of men don't want to play that game.
Well, you know, what I discovered also in this process of working with men and the women who love them is very often the women become afraid of a visionless man, and not being taught how to support him, she will beat him up verbally, beat him up emotionally because he's not doing enough or being enough, because he's not able to either articulate or stand in or create his vision. And
absolutely.
It's very often the things that a woman may say to a man, even when she says them in upset, and I think it's more fear than anger, but that's a whole nother conversation. I think that the things that she says to him are absolutely true, but we have to find a way to say it and present it and offer it to our partners, our sons, our husbands, our brothers, our fathers, so that they can hear it and we don't push them into a sense of inadequacy. But I just found that to be, it's like men have arrested development when it comes to creating a vision, because a vision, you have to open it to the universe, and you may not be able to control every factor of it, every iota of it, but that doesn't mean that it won't come into fruition.
Yeah, that's why a lot of men run when those possibilities don't go the way that they want them to. And you're absolutely correct when you say a lot of men can't deal with constructive criticism, because constructive criticism is criticism. The operative word criticism, constructive, a person has to know how to say what they're saying, because as a man, I can speak. I know a lot of guys that are this way, and I had to learn how to, and I'm still learning how to do this. I had to learn how to be able to take that construction and turn it into something instead of allowing it to be something as a personal attack. I had to understand that person was speaking the truth. They're not telling me something to hurt me. They're telling me something to help me. I had to get those emotions out of the way. But also, the person had to learn how to speak the truth, so that it would be acceptable to the man. And a lot of women they get frustrated. You get tired of it. I mean, I hate to say this, and a lot of guys are going to hate me saying this, but there's a lot of truth. When it comes to men, sometimes men are little boys in their understanding of how to take the truth about themselves from someone else. And because we don't accept the truth about ourselves sometimes, when someone else gives it to us, it's twice as hard to take. And unless you're able to say it the correct way for us to get it, a lot of times we become very protective of those emotions within ourselves, and we'll put you off and fight you for that.
Well, here's what I want to offer the ladies who are out there listening and may recognize that their sons, their husbands, their partners, their fathers, even if you're a female supervisor and you've got male workers, here are three keys to know how to present challenging, difficult, constructive information to men, but really to anybody. Number one, does something need to be said? We've got to know that, because sometimes we speak when it's really not appropriate to speak. Does something need to be said? Number two, does it need to be said now? Because we know in all areas of life, timing is everything. So it may not be the best time to say it, but does something need to be said? Does something need to be said now? Does something need to be said by me? And the final one is, can I say it in the way I would need to hear it? So those four things make difficult conversations much easier to engage. Number one, does something need to be said? Does it need to be said now? Does it need to be said by me now? And can I say it the way I would need to hear it? If we follow those four guidelines, we'll be able to support one another in all areas of our lives, not just creating a vision. But I just wanted to hear a man's point of view about what I was suspecting about how challenging it is sometimes for men to receive, to hold, to create a vision.
Now, Iyanla, let me jump in and just ask, and Tony, you can get your input on this too, but Iyanla, those keys that you just gave, the four keys, does something need to be said? Does it need to be said now? Does it need to be said by me? And can I say it in a way that I would need to hear it? What if there are listeners out there who have done every single one of those steps, yet they still don't seem to have any kind of indications or any kind of proof that the individual is, you know, holding on to his vision or trying to accomplish what he says he wants to accomplish? If they've done all those keys, what else can they do to help, or should they just
if the T's don't work, then you got to work the A's. Let me just say this, and I'm speaking specifically between relationships between men and women, but I know
right.
there are same-sex relationships, and partners are partners. It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Somebody's not with you because they don't have nobody else to be with. Hopefully someone's with you because they care about you, they respect you, they honor you. And if you don't know how to work your partner's soft spot, then you need to get out the relationship. You need to find out which way you got to curl and twist and rub and speak softly and purr so that you can get your point across. All right, that's number one. Number two, if the T's don't work, then you've got to do the A's. Affirmation, acknowledgement, and appreciation. You've got to affirm your partner. Very often as women, we don't realize how desperately our partners need affirmation. Wow, you look great in that shirt. My, I just love how your muscles flex when you wash that car. You know what? Every time I see how you wash a dish, I just get excited. I love how it feels when you come in the room and wink at me. Affirm your partner. You have to affirm your partner. And then you have to acknowledge them for the things that they do. So very often in relationships, we get bogged down in what you ain't doing that we forget to tell you what you are doing. Oh, sweetie, thank you for putting the toilet seat down. Oh, boo, I thank you so much. I so appreciate and acknowledge you for picking your socks up today. Thank you for bringing home the milk. Thank you for acknowledge the person and appreciate them. Let them know what you appreciate about them. Whenever I'm doing my relationship boot camp with couples, the number one complaint that I hear from, mostly from men, but I've done same-sex couples where one partner or other says the same thing, is they never let me know what they appreciate. They tell me what I do wrong, but they never tell me what they appreciate. I do this and that and this and that, and they don't even notice it. So if you're trying to get something across to your partner, you've got to affirm, acknowledge, and appreciate. Then you've got to speak in a way that you would want to hear it. I'm telling you, there's no way that you can do that with a clear intention and love in your heart, and it doesn't motivate your partner to move forward. No way.
Right, right. And, you know, and I want to say something. I just want to confirm what you're saying, what Tony said, and, you know, be a little transparent. I have a situation, and, you know, I have a very important person in my life, and this individual is struggling with some things, and it's been quite a while that the individual has been struggling with some things. And I have done all those things, and they actually do work. I mean, and when I talk to my family and my friends about, you know, well, you know, it's really difficult, and he's struggling with some things about himself internally, but I'm supporting him, I affirm him, I acknowledge him, I appreciate him, I tell him how beautiful and gorgeous he is, and how smart and brilliant he is. And I'm not just saying that, it's true. So it's easy for me because it's true. It's really true. He is brilliant. And my family and my friends will say, well, why are you doing that? He's not doing the things that you need. So, you know, why are you doing the things? But, you know, it's not about that. And I want everybody to hear me when I say it's not about what he's doing for you. You have to do what you want to do within yourself. I'm not doing this looking for something in return. You have to do it because you want to do it for you. Because you love that person. You want that person to feel better because you have that love in your heart for him.
And absolutely. And I do. I also think that there comes a moment when you've got to throw fire under the booty. You know? But one of the things, if I could offer, not just to you, Kathy, but to anyone, one of the things that I learned the hard way is I never gossip about my partner with outside people unless it's good gossip. I never put on anybody else's mind the things that we may be challenged by. I just don't do it because everybody's mind gets in it, and then everybody has an opinion, and I don't want anybody to look at him and see him with anything other than eyes of love and respect and support. And I'm not challenging what you're saying, and I'm not saying that they don't. But we just want to be mindful about how we speak about our partners to anybody and never gossip about them. And I don't mean underhanded, nasty gossip. But
you have to know who to talk to.
Unless it's good.
You have to choose your sources. I mean, you can't just put it out there on the Internet. But, you know, you have to choose sources, people who are very close to you, people that you know have your back, people that you know support you no matter what.
That's right.
Yeah,
you can't
just put it out there to anybody. I absolutely agree.
Yes. And so I don't know how we got on this topic. It was about vision. It's about affirming your partner.
It was about those keys. Yeah.
Right. And also
about
when people are stuck, how is it that you can motivate them? How can you support them in moving forward? But here's another thing that I want us to understand is you can't want it for them more than they want it for themselves.
That's true.
That's a place where women in particular fall completely or flat on their face. Wanting it for someone more than they want it for themselves. Seeing it for them when they can't see it for themselves. So here's a little tidbit that I would offer anyone and everyone. You don't get to tell people how to live their life, but you do get to choose if you're going to participate in the way they're living.
Right.
Okay? You don't get to tell people how to live their life. But when you look and see how they're living, you get to choose if you want to participate. Now, if you choose to participate in the way they're living, there can be no whining and no complaining.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's your choice. You can choose in, you can choose out. But if you choose in, you don't get to whine and complain and judge how they're living because you saw it before you made the choice. And so very often we try to tell people how to live or we get in their life and we're telling them what they should be doing and they shouldn't be doing it, how they should be doing it and why they shouldn't be doing it. No. You don't get to tell people how to live. And if you choose to participate in the way they're living, keep your mouth shut.
That's right. And even if you met the person and they were everything you wanted, they had every trait that you ever wanted in an individual, and something changed, I still say what you just said, Iyanla, it still applies. If they change and you decide you don't like the change, then you make the choice. Accept the change or move on.
Right. Well, you know, after 43 years in and out relationship, my husband divorced me by email. And at first I was very, very hysterical, in high pissosity. You know, and after months and months and forgiveness and blah, 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 you know, one day it was just such a simple thing. And I said, okay, I know I shouldn't ask this question, Holy Spirit, but I got to ask you why. Just tell me why. And, you know, the answer was so simple, it healed me forever. And the answer was, he changed his mind. I said, what? He changed his mind. It's just that simple. I don't have to hate him. I don't have to be upset with him. I don't have to be angry with him. He changed his mind. 43 years, he changed his mind. I didn't change my mind. But he gets to change his mind. And I can't convince him that he shouldn't. It's his mind. It's his life. He changed his mind, Ianla. You don't have to like it. He changed his mind. You don't have to agree with it. He changed his mind. Now, what are you going to do? Are
That's
you going
right.
to stay mad because he changed his mind? He changed his mind. He don't want you.
That's right. That's right. And accept it. Accept.
Oh.
But he may not want
oh,
you, but you want you. God wants
yeah.
you. And
well,
that's
when
all
we,
you can focus on.
That's what we can do. So I hope that, I don't know why I said that. Somebody out there needed to hear that, so I just wanted to offer that, because sometimes we get stuck in things. We get stuck in things that happen. We get stuck in what people did and what they didn't do and what they said and what they didn't say. You know, people change their mind. And we've got to learn to be more flexible and learn to trust the universe more, that even if they change their mind, you know, your life is going to move forward, and you are the only one who gets to say what goes on in your life. So if you get to say, I'm going to be unhappy and pissed off for the next 50 years because Shaquita left me, well, then that's what you're saying, and that's what you're choosing. Or if you get to say, let me hurt for a while, let me cry for a while, let me see what I've learned, let me remember the good times, and let me open my heart and get ready for the next one. It's your choice.
That is absolutely right.
So for all of those...
People don't realize they have choices. They feel like, well, I can't. I mean, they use that word a lot. I can't. I just can't get over it. I can't move forward. I can't. But you can. You have choices.
Well, you know, choices are one of the things that we work on in the Getting Unstuck Boot Camp. And this is a very rigorous program. It is not for punks. Let me just say that. If you're a punk, don't call me. Because if you're not really ready to put your butt on the line for what you say you want, then this is not the process for you. So we look at choices, and we look at commitments, and we look at integrity, and we look at intention, and we look at vision, and we take small baby steps towards it. And you know, sometimes we're stuck because we want the big victory all at once. And the big victory isn't coming all at once. You're not going to drop 50 pounds by Saturday. Stop it.
Right.
But if you can celebrate every little pound that you lose, if you can celebrate every little step that you make towards opening the business, if you can celebrate every little page, every paragraph that you write towards writing the book, then you'll slowly become unstuck. Sometimes we're not just stuck, we're greedy. We want too much too fast, and we're not willing to do the work to get it done. So people who are interested in the Getting Unstuck Boot Camp, you can shoot me an email, and I'll give you the email address.
I'm going to post that in the chat room. So, what is it?
The email address is www.innervisionsworldwide.com. Oh, no, that's the email. That's the website.
That's okay. I want that, too. And
okay.
That's the www.innervisionsworldwide.com.
That is the website. And the email address for the, if you're interested in the Getting Unstuck Boot Camp or the Relationship Boot Camp, for all of those people out there that got a relationship hanging by a thread, I take you through 6 weeks, then I guarantee you we'll either put you together or take you apart. So, and the email address is Y-E-Y-E. YeYeHouse@AOL.com. That's me, YeYe. That means the mother's mother. YeYeHouse@AOL.com. And we will get you the information. I think the next one doesn't start until September. the next boot camp, but I only take 24 people. So you've got to fill out an application. You've got to demonstrate to me that you're ready. And if you're ready, we accept you, and we take you through the 6 weeks. And I guarantee you, your life will never be the same. Same thing with the relationship.
Is the description of the boot camp on your InnerVisions Worldwide website?
No, it's actually on the iyamla.com website, which is currently being redesigned. So
okay.
You can't get it there, but I'll try to get it over. But if you send me the email, I'll send you the description. I'll send
okay.
you exactly what it is and the things that you need to do. And let me just say there is a cost attached to it because nothing in this life is free.
Honey,
and I've given.
There is no way I would expect to have that much time with you for free. Oh, my God.
All the people do all the time, but it's not even paying me. It's investing in your vision. It's not about paying me. Because
that's
you
right.
can't pay me. You cannot pay me for the love. You cannot pay me for the mastery. You cannot pay me for the excellence. You cannot pay me for the 43 years of commitment. So
right.
it's about an investment in your vision. It's an investment in your vision. And if you are committed to the vision, you know, money is never an object for me. Never.
And you know what I say, listeners, when you're interested in something, you do what's convenient. But when you're committed, you do whatever it takes.
That's right. So yayyayhouse@AOL.com or www.innervisionsworldwide.com. For the women who feel stuck, you know, they might be interested in our annual Rites of Passage program. We have a Rites of Passage program that we do every year, a week-long program at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. And particularly women who are 29, 39, 49, 59, who are making that transition into the new decade, oh, it's just an incredible opportunity. Now, that is on the InnerVisions website, www.innervisionsworldwide.com. All the information about the rites of passage is there.
Excellent, excellent. We are coming up on our final 2 minutes in the show, and Iyanla, I want to thank you ever so kindly. I am so pumped and excited right now. You have made my day. I know my listeners are just thrilled. All the listeners who are on hold and still listening through your phone line, if you had blocked numbers, I'm sorry I wasn't able to get to you all. If you want to send me an email note, I will try my best to make sure that we get your answers and comments to Ms. Van Zandt because I know you love her as much as I do. And thank you to everyone who's in the chat room. And everyone who will be listening to the archive downloads, we thank you, and we are so happy. We hope we have touched your life today, and we hope we have given you some tidbits and information that will really make a difference in helping you to get unstuck and reinvent your life. So, Iyanla, we thank you. We thank you.
Thank you, my darling. It was my pleasure and honor. Thank you, Tony. Thank you, listeners.
Thank you.
And I hope to see some of you in the boot camp.
Absolutely, absolutely. We are going to sign off for now, and I invite you to join us next week as we start our July theme, which also is going to be reinventing your life, but we're going to add the twist of getting unstuck. So join us. We look forward to seeing you next week. We're going to sign off for now. I'm Kathy Holloway-Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And good night, everyone. Have a blessed week.